This call is being recorded.
This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and today we have three presenters talking about energy efficiency across the country and some of the latest developments. Our first presenter is going to be Tim Bancroft with Quest, Inc. Second presenter is going to be Kevin Moyer with Pace Equity. And Catherine Johnson, Dr. Catherine Johnson, is going to follow up. She's from Johnson Consulting Group. So why don't you go ahead and start it out, Tim?
Sure. Thanks, Sierra. So this is Tim Bancroft with Quest. I am a program manager based in Portland, working for Quest, which is based in Oakland. And I would spend a couple minutes today talking about Quest's work doing integrated energy retrofits for local governments and within the scope of utility programs in California. A little background about Quest. We are a energy efficiency program manager and engineering consulting firm. Been around since the early 2000s, earlier than that, in a couple of different forms, but worked with California and Northwest IOUs, as well as some muni utilities and others across the United States. In that, we have administered a number of local government partnerships in California and operated a number of retro-commissioning programs, IOUs. One of those local government partnerships was and I think continues to be one of the most successful in terms of energy savings, perhaps in terms of cost effectiveness, and that was the East Bay Energy Watch, which serves the San Francisco East Bay, which is Alameda and Contra Costa counties. So that comprises, I think, 35 different local governments, including both counties. Drilling down even more, we drew on our experience with RCX projects and developing very customized solutions for local government customers, and developed a program called the Municipal Implementation Team Program, or MIT for short. And for a long time, for probably 10 or 12 years, we continued down that path of sending engineers out to a site, developing projects that were on one hand tailored to each customer's needs, but on the other, also limited to what was on the so-called measure map of eligible measures from the utility that we were working under. So there were some recent policy developments that kind of led us to advocate for change, so that we could work more broadly with local governments and kind of do more things that they needed to do to be leaders of their own community. First, in 2013, Title 24, Part 6 Energy Code really raised the bar for what we call industry standard practice. So all of the, or many of the measures that we used to be able to offer soon became required by code. So that meant that they were no longer eligible for incentive dollars. That makes projects a little bit harder to sell, because if you're no longer offering rebates for that work, the co-payment for the project that the customer has to front becomes larger. Also, there were more measures that were triggering the local permitting process. So the increased costs of project documentation also became kind of cost prohibitive. The second policy that's relatively recent that we are still kind of reeling from, but also excited about the platform that it gives us to innovate for our customers, was California Senate Bill 350. And while this was a fairly wide-reaching bill, the gist of it was that California needed to double its energy efficiency savings with the same budget, mind you, by the year 2030. And we had to do that in the same cost-effective manner. So with lighting measures slowly losing their traction in the marketplace, where do we go? So we needed to start thinking about much deeper savings, deeper energy efficiency opportunities in buildings. And finally, I think most recently was California Assembly Bill 802. And there were a couple of different things that came out of that, but the most important one for our programs, I think, were what we call HOPs. H-O-P-P-S, which were high opportunity programs. And all of the IOUs in California had a chance to work with internal staff, of course, but also with external consultants to create ways to recover savings that had been classified now as missed opportunities. So things that we were no longer to we were no longer able to incent because code had been ratcheted up so much in recent years, and asking the question, how do we get those savings back? with all of these new challenges, but also new opportunities, we started to steer our MIT program in a different direction. And one of the things that came out of AB 802, one of those HOPS programs, was PG&E's on-bill financing alternative pathway program. For a long time, there have been some very very talented, very tech-savvy engineers working on what is called the Investor Confidence Project. And what the ICP aimed to do was basically work outside of the utility paradigm and create a set of KPI and best practices that would allow a building operator, building owner, to invest in energy efficiency projects so long as they went through a very prescribed set of quality assurance review by other engineering firms. So PG&E's on-bill financing alternative pathway program, OBFAP for short, is underpinned by the ICP protocol. And that has basically blown the universe of energy efficiency measures wide open. Everything is back on the table now because not only can you use those measures that are on a utility's measure map, but as long as you can build a project that project-wide has a payback of 10 years or less, you can use up to $4 million of PG&E's on-bill financing resources to fund whole building projects. You can include things like windows. You can finance things like HVAC rooftop unit retrofits, new heat pumps, new water heaters, all of that. So that is a really exciting opportunity that we're working with a couple of cities on in the East Bay to create projects that are really tend to be, you know, in line with the capital intense, very long-term payback on their list of capital improvement projects. Those are things that, you know, they really wait for the equipment to be on its last legs before they switch anything out. But now that we have this kind of fresh way of funding projects, they are looking at how to do those improvements much earlier on now. So,
Tim, I think you and Catherine are going to have a lot to talk about here.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Let's
this
move
really
on
gets
to,
at.
Kevin Moyer, and I know the two of you, all of you, will have a lot to talk about here. Kevin, do you want to go ahead and discuss a little bit about your end of this
Sure.
whole thing? On,
yeah,
go ahead.
sure. So Pace Equity has been around for 3 years. We're a small private company. We're focused on a market called PACE, which stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy, which enables a long-term assessment to be placed on a property to fund energy efficiency and alternative energy improvements to that property for terms of up to 20 years or more, typically through a fixed rate financing. And as chief investment officer and a partner in PACE Equity, we provide turnkey project development of these energy efficiency projects in commercial buildings, and then also deliver the long-term PACE financing to actually implement the project. And we work across all sectors, including hospitality, multifamily, office, industrial, retail, and as well as new construction. So PACE can actually be used both for kind of a classic retrofit of an energy of a property, kind of like what Tim was talking about, but it can also be used in a new construction capital stack where you're providing an energy efficiency improvement over some sort of existing code baseline. PACE legislation is active in over 30 states around the nation. There are 16 state markets that have active programs, and PACE Equity is active in all 16 of those markets around the country. And we've got about 20 market leaders in these markets. We tend to work mostly directly with property owners and developers, and we're actually, so this is a new financing tool for those of you that aren't aware of it. It's been around for probably 10 years, but the commercial PACE market is still growing in terms of its utilization and size. I think there's been several hundred million dollars in projects completed nationally. And, these are great projects from a standpoint of it does require a lot of public-private partnerships. So typically there's a municipality or a county or a state involved that's either running a state-run program or is running, a more regional or local PACE district. And the existence of that PACE district enables the secured lien to be put on the property, which helps secure the availability of the capital for the financing. I will tell you that I think over the last couple of years, I've seen a real embracing amongst the economic development professional community, many of which are located in state, county, and local government entities as an economic development driver and tool. Since we do a lot of, I think we're probably one of the largest developers of new construction PACE, and we see PACE as a very valuable tool in helping building owners fill out their capital stack and get these projects done. We see projects that are used in basically five broad categories, what we call adaptive reuse, which is basically taking an existing building or a shell of a building or a historic building and turning it into something different than what it was used for historically. New construction, which we talked about, aging infrastructure, which is a problem pretty much nationwide, and then not-for-profits, and then also distributed generation. Examples of some projects that we've completed in the last 6 months. We completed the first office building that was done that utilized PACE in a new market tax credit structure, so a fairly complicated capital stack. That was for a Class A office building in downtown Milwaukee. We also did the first micro-unit multifamily apartment project. It was first that used PACE and also the first that was done in the new Denver PACE district. And then we've got we've seen a lot of activity in the hospitality market with hotels, ranging from boutique hotels, which is a redo of an existing property, to, for example, like Marriott and Westin hotels in different communities. That, I think, I've used my 5 minutes.
Okay. Thanks so much, Kevin. Catherine, you're up next.
Sure. Okay. Well, this is Catherine Johnson, and I just wanted to do, sounds like we have some folks who work with in California, so I probably won't spend too much time, but I just wanted to give a quick overview of some of the opportunities and activities that are going on with the government agencies throughout California. They have, as the first gentleman talked about, the local government partnerships, which are, you know, part of a very important role in energy efficiency, as AB 758 basically sent into motion, play the fact that local governments are viewed as essential business partners, according to the governor, and they have now, for the past 10 years, California has been sort of leading the way and having developed a variety of different local government partnerships, regional energy networks, to help deliver energy efficiency programs in tandem with the utilities and leverage the 500 different local governments. LGPs, or local government partnerships, as we were talked about a little bit earlier, are, you know, collaborative programs that administer the California investor-owned utility programs, and they account for approximately 8% of the state's annual billion-dollar budget and represent about 4.5% of savings for electricity and 2.9% of natural savings for gas. So they're really critically important component in California's overall energy efficiency portfolio. The main thing that LGPs do is they sort of help retrofit local government facilities that we were talking about. They also promote energy efficiency communities and also support the Energy Efficiency Strategic Plan. And that's something that I've been involved with because there have been several evaluations of the different types of activities that local government partnerships are doing to help support strategic energy plans, such as helping to improve building codes and code compliance, as well as developing greenhouse gas emission plans and capacity building. And then there's another permutation in California called the Regional Energy Networks, which is basically a hybrid entity that function with the IOUs and in partnership with, again, helping the investor-owned utilities deliver programs, but they focus on activities that the utilities aren't currently doing or pilot activities and try to partner and reach hard-to-reach markets. So they have territories throughout the California. Obviously, Bayrin, I think, is what one of the gentlemen was talking about, and that includes the San Francisco Bay Area. They also have it out in the Southern California, SoCalREN, and they do a variety of different kinds of programs, from single-family to multifamily, whole building, local government outreach, green building, low-income financing, and also a regional energy center. And then the last permutation they have for government partnerships in California are called community choice aggregators. Right now, they have equal footing to the IOUs, and the current one is Marin Clean Energy, which was the first one in California, and they administer programs on their own. And so the thing that I'm most involved in and excited is we're starting to get the results from all these different activities through a series of evaluation reports. And basically, they're sort of identifying areas of overlap, areas of improvement, and they are documenting that these programs are indeed leading to energy efficiency savings across the board. Obviously, there's always areas for improvement and both tracking the activities as well as identifying ways to reach out better and help leverage the IOU presence as well as the presence of all these different organizations. But it is a, you know, innovative and fairly successful approach to reaching out to cities and communities around California. That's why I thought it'd be kind of interesting just to kind of do a quick overview on that. So that's me.
And Catherine does analysis for states and utilities on their energy efficiency programs in nationally, and is well known in her field. So, okay. Welcome a few other people here. Baird, good to see you. And I see Dottie, you're here from Michigan, Marquette, Michigan, Upper Peninsula.
Actually, I'm Jen Hill representing Dottie today. Hello.
Oh, okay.
And this is really interesting.
What was your name again? No, I'm sorry.
Jen Hill, J-E-N-N.
Okay. Welcome. And also, Evan, I see that you're here as well. So anybody have any questions? I'm sure that At least, if nothing else, Tim and Catherine should have some questions for each other.
This is Evan. I had a question for Catherine about the Marin Clean Energy. Was you said was an example of doing energy conservation programs, is how I heard it.
Yeah.
And you're saying the community choice aggregators can get into this. Could you explain that a bit more? I knew they did buying from renewable generation sources, but how do they play in energy conservation, electricity conservation measures?
Well, basically what they do is they're considered on equal footing with the IOUs according to a new California code decision that was in 2014. Basically, they're able to administer energy efficiency programs under the CPUC, and they're subject to the same requirements in terms of they have to have impact evaluations to document savings. I'm not an expert in this, but the California Public Utilities Commission is basically working with cities to try and get them to be independent providers of energy efficiency programs.
I wanted to mention what
how do they get paid? What's the rate? You know, how do they get paid, and how do customers pay for that? We're part of our Peninsula Clean Energy here in San Mateo County, but I haven't been aware of. We pay for the generation part of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
If it's conservation, how does that fit into what we pay, or how do we do that if we're in Marin, which I'm not, but you say Marin has set it up.
Yeah, that's up in the Bay Area. I probably should be knowing more about this, so I apologize that I don't have all the answers, but I think it has to do with the agreement they've entered in with the CPUC and the utilities. So I would suggest reaching out to you can send me a note, and I'll try and connect you with the right people at the CPUC to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Sierra, you can send out my email after this.
Yes, I will do that. And I just missed somebody. Ron Kamen, is that you over there in New York?
This is Ron Kamen.
Hey there. Okay, sorry about that. I saw you there, and I didn't mention your name. But Ron's with Earthkind Energy in New York. And go ahead with the questions.
I have a question. So my question actually is revolving around PACE. So we're doing an electric vehicle project with a bunch of counties and municipalities throughout New York, and in particular Westchester County, which has the first community choice aggregation, and went to the local PACE provider to talk about them potentially providing PACE financing for electric vehicle charging stations, which is part of the plan to roll out a bunch of charging stations. And they came back with the assessment that they can't do PACE for charging stations because it doesn't have energy benefits to the building. I was wondering if any of your folks have any input or insights or other places that may have used PACE for electric vehicle charging infrastructure, and if so, if they could direct me, that would be great.
Yeah, I think it depends on how the different state statutes are written.
You want to introduce yourself? Is this Kevin talking?
Yes, it's Kevin.
Yeah,
okay. Some of them are very very broad. So Ohio would be one of those states. So if you had let's say you were doing a project for a building that was either new construction or redevelopment, and they want to put in charging stations, We probably could include that in Ohio, but other states might be more restrictive on, you know, the measures actually have to save energy. I mean, I'd look at, as long as if it was attached to a building in different states that I was working on, we may be able to include it. But typically, PACE is used for measures that either save energy or generate energy.
You mean electricity?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Well, electricity, natural gas. Some states have actually broadened the PACE statute. So, for example, in California, they broadened it to include seismic reinforcement, which doesn't save energy, obviously, but it's kind of a public good kind of measure. Also, both California and Texas, for example, are very motivated to include water conservation savings, which have a little bit of energy savings, associated with them, but they were really focused on actually the conservation of water itself. And then in Florida, they've expanded the space statute to include wind reinforcement. So you will see different variations between states in terms of what they consider to be PACE eligible measures. And some states are fairly restrictive and kind of stick within guidelines that maybe go back to some of the DOE programs where, you know, you have to save a certain amount of energy or generate a certain amount of energy. But there are big variations between states in terms of what are eligible measures, and some of those do not include the saving or generation of power. I don't know that New York has actually done a lot of PACE projects.
Yeah, there's a decent amount. They're starting up, definitely at a less of a degree than other states, but apparently the restrictions in New York are a little more hefty, I guess. So Ohio would be the way you would suggest looking, or are there any other states worth taking a look at their PACE?
Ohio's fairly broad. Kentucky's fairly broad. Those are two that come to mind. Other states like Colorado, they're actually using the PACE statute to kind of drive public policy and drive. So Colorado has a fairly stringent energy code within their building code. So they're like 2012 IECC, 2015 in some cases. And so they're actually using PACE to help relieve the burden on property owners to adopt to those levels of standards, but they're also using it to drive a high energy efficiency standard in their building code. So in that state, we have to save as a percentage of energy modeled against that building code. If it's been an existing building, you're typically modeling against an existing energy bill. So, I mean, various states have various requirements. Some will just say that they have to generate savings. Others will say they have to generate a savings investment ratio greater than one. Others are a percentage over a code number, like Colorado. But Ohio is pretty broad. Might be able to get a charging station done. Not as standalone, probably. But I'd have to get maybe a determination on that question.
And so it doesn't seem like anyone's done it so far in terms of vehicle charging stations, California or anywhere else.
I don't think so.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is Jen Hill up in Michigan. My question, we have, so the Upper Peninsula is functionally an island that's connected with a long extension cord to Wisconsin for our electricity. And we're very reliant on purchase contracts with PPAs with our munis and co-ops. We have 19 utilities. We only have a population of 310,000 people. And so I'm very interested in the RENs, I think, and understanding that these, they seem like they came out of statute, but I'm wondering if that is, so understanding that it came out of a specific California policy initiative, but it immediately sparked my interest because that's a question of, we have hard to reach rural populations and a very high need, because the other thing about the Upper Peninsula is several of our utilities are charging 20 cents a kilowatt hour, and two of them are charging 26 cents a kilowatt hour. So we have a very high demand for energy efficiency.
Okay. So what
and we do have PACE. We have
you
PACE.
You do have PACE. Yeah, that's great. You were asking
and
about...
And we have on-bill financing as well, but it's new and no one's implemented it yet.
So your question is, did you want to know more about RENs? What the RENs?
Yeah, so the RENs, I'm curious, because how are they funded? And I'm wondering specifically if there's something to that we could copy in that model that's different than or unique about it. Or
They're funded. Basically, they get a cut of the ratepayer funds that are allocated to. There's a state budget, obviously, based on the ratepayer funds. And then they get a percentage of that money to implement their own programs. It basically comes out of the IOUs, pile of money. So that's how it's funded, is through the IOUs.
And it's IOU service area.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And then it's just diving deeper into their service area?
Well, this is doing stuff that they haven't been able to do. So basically, RENs are trying not to duplicate the utility efforts, but rather complement and expand. So they're serving markets that the utilities currently wouldn't be serving, such as hard-to-reach rural areas. They are working a lot in, there's a lot of rural California counties that basically don't get a lot of attention from the IOUs. So the RENs are trying to get them to get some energy efficiency services down there, as well as doing some pilot activities, some testing out some new things that maybe haven't been done before. And as well as they do financing, and they also do codes and standards work, and whole build, but single family, whole multifamily, whole building, those kinds of things.
Interesting.
I'd be happy to follow up with more information. You know, CR, you're going to send out my contact info, right? So people can call me up or
right.
email me.
Right, and everybody's contact is online right now at mseforum.com/connect, and then click on Meet the Leaders, so we have everybody there. But I will definitely send out a link to the recording as well as the people who are on, you know, the presenters on the call, so anybody can follow up with that. So anybody else here?
But it is an interesting approach. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
No, I was just saying it was an interesting approach to try and get the cities to try and step in where there's gaps in the program offerings from the standard IOUs.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing that with, we just got new energy laws in December, but before that, you know, they would, when they hit their 1%, they would just stop.
Yep.
You know, on the calendar year. So, you know, don't try to do anything in the fall, basically, was the,
yep.
Well, nothing happened.
Common, unfortunately.
They have changed that language. But we'll see how that gets rolled out.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'd be happy to chat with you more offline.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
This is Evan. I got dialed in late, so I missed the opening to Tim's talk. But at some point he referred to now new options are all on the table, are back on the table, and I was wondering what particular new conservation options was he referring to?
Hi, Evan. All of the measures that have really never been incented by the IOUs, those are now eligible for 0% on bill financing. So in the past 5 or 6 years, we've been working through a very active regular on bill financing program where you can finance things like lighting, refrigeration, some RCX measures until recently anyway. But you can never get rebates for things like windows, even some kinds of attic and wall insulation. Those are no longer eligible for financing or for rebates. So now that there is a pilot going on at PG&E, it's one of their high opportunity programs that was that came out of AB 802. You can combine all of the measures that are eligible for rebates with measures that are not eligible. And then as long as you can package projects in such a way that it will pay back in 10 years or less, you can finance up to $1 million per site as a local government, and up to $4 million per customer.
So those sound like measures for a kind of commercial establishments rather than residential or large
yes.
apartment complexes.
Yes, yeah, only for non-residential properties. I think there might be some other utilities who offer on-bill repayments for residential properties, but right now it's just focused on business and government customers.
Is there any distinction made between commercial sector and what might usually be called industrial sector, and are there examples of a company or industrial sector making use of this financing?
I'm not familiar. I know that all commercial and industrial customers fall into that business category. So I imagine that the industrial entities would qualify. But as some of the largest users in California, the industrial customers have multiple programs that they can access already. So I don't know how much they would rely on this OBF pilot.
Those would be programs through the IOUs.
Correct.
And I had one other follow up on that. You said addicts. You referred to addicts and wall insulation no longer eligible for most rebates. I would guess those two are no longer eligible because normal economics now justify them without rebates. Is that mostly the case?
It's more from the perspective of energy code. So for new construction, starting in 2014, when they began to implement that most recent round of code, all of those pretty low cost rebated measures like attic and roof and wall insulation, those became industry standard practice for new construction in California. So there have been those and a whole suite of other measures that were sunset or eliminated from the measure tables at the IOUs. So
mm-hmm.
while that has created some challenges, my message, I hope that I communicated through my talk, is that there are many talented people now focused on how to recover all of those missed opportunities that were left behind by code.
Okay. On the case of windows, I think of double pane windows, and I've heard that in most situations those are not cost effective, and they may not pass your 10-year payback rule that you mentioned that some have. I'm distinguishing the windows case from the walls, attics, and roofs.
Yes, that's a good point. And one of the strategies that developers can use to build those projects within a 10-year payback term is by foregoing rebates for the most cost-effective measures, which are still eligible for rebates from the utility. So if you've got an LED retrofit happening in your building and it's going to pay back in, let's say, 2 years, you can forego the incentives so that you can buy down, basically, the cost-effectiveness of the other parts of your project so that, if your windows and your insulation pay back in 20 years, but your lighting pays back in 2, it might just balance out that on the whole, your project will pay back in 10 or less.
And to whom do you have to make this case to show that your overall project has 10-year or less payback?
Both to PG&E and also to the quality assurance provider, which is ARUP, A-R-U-P. They are the engineering consulting firm administering the on-bill financing alternative pathway pilot program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? I am very interested in learning more about some of the savings from energy efficiency programs and what's going on across the country in that area as a case to be made for doing more of that. So anybody have any thoughts on that? Catherine, you mentioned something about they're doing some analysis out in California.
Yeah, basically, I'm an EM&V advisor, and evaluation, measurement, and verification is what I do, and I'm an advisor to the various technical studies that are currently underway. They've done some analysis on preliminary savings for the local government partnerships. They're in the process of doing impact evaluations for the multifamily programs that should be available probably by September. And overall, you know, the evaluations are determining that these programs are indeed saving some energy, and they are reaching especially these hard-to-reach audiences like single-family and multifamily and in the hard-to-reach locations in California. There's also obviously some concerns making sure that they're using the correct savings estimates and determining if the process is going well, because it's a challenge. A lot of customers get confused about the different players in the market. But preliminary results look pretty promising, and the state is certainly supportive of these activities, and I think we'll know more in a couple months, but they're definitely making some, you know, real contributions to energy savings overall. I don't
Any
have the numbers in front of me, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Any information on the economic benefits to municipalities, counties, utilities?
Or where are such published?
Sorry?
I was adding, or where are such analyses published?
They're available on the CalMAC, C-A-L-M-A-C, website. They're also available at the CPUC website under evaluation studies. There's millions of them, not millions, there's lots of them, thousands of them up there across all of the studies that are done. But if you just search on RENs or local government partnerships or regional energy networks, that'll probably bring you all the ones that have been finalized and approved.
This is Kevin. One comment I would make is that the PACE financing product, we do incorporate utility incentives on behalf of the customer. But what PACE allows the customer to do is kind of look beyond simple payback and do kind of a holistic approach to their property. So, you know, you can include obviously shorter payback items like LED lights and other things. You can incorporate incentives, but you can also do a more comprehensive redo of the building that really focuses on a weighted average life of all the capital investment that's going into the building to make it more efficient. So it's more of a complete, it's almost like a matching the capital to the life of the equipment in the building. I mean, most of the PACE terms average like 20 years typically, even though they may include some shorter payback items.
Hey, Kevin, this is Tim. I'm pretty new to PACE, but the PACE loan stays with the property, not necessarily with the homeowner after they leave, correct?
It does.
Okay.
I don't do residential, but in both residential and commercial, it is filed and stays with the property.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's one of the key differences where on bill financing, those loans need to be paid off by the customer to which they were issued. So if that customer defaults or moves, there are some mechanisms in place to, I think, work with that customer and recover the funds that were issued.
Right, and it also means taking that one step further, the PACE financing is non-recourse to the owner of the property since it is attached to the property.
Thanks.
Are there any mid to large scale energy efficiency solutions as far as buildings are concerned, either home or commercial? Looking at CCAs particularly?
On the PACE side, I will tell you that, you know, and I've seen a lot of projects over the years, so let's just say, you know, you've got an existing office building that might be a vintage 1970 or 80. The building that I'm sitting in downtown Toledo, over $1 million PACE project was put into this 1980 building, and we've reduced the electricity bill by 40%. So
I was looking at, as far as volume is concerned, numbers of buildings in an area.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I totally understand the value of it per building, but I'm looking at, are there any solutions that can cover multiple buildings at one time, like in a community choice aggregation scenario or something along that line, or is that not being done?
Typically in the PACE transactions, I mean, you could have multiple parcels. I mean, typically we deal with one property owner. We could get involved with multiple buildings and multiple parcels, but we have to be able to attach that tax parcel to a building owner. One of the unique aspects of Ohio is that, and to some extent Kentucky as well, is that any property owner can participate. So in Ohio, for example, buildings owned by local governments can also participate. So if you have a township, city or county building, it can participate, just not state or federal.
Okay, anybody else here? All right. Well, you can find each other online. And like I said, it's mseforum.com/connect, and then find Meet the Leaders. Your names are all there. And we'll reconvene. We have a webinar on the 20th, and that should be interesting. And so yeah, we're looking out for the invitation for that. And we'll have another conference call on the, I think it's the 27th now. And you'll be interested in that too, Jen, because I'm specifically bringing some councils and government planning boards together to have conversations about how they can help move some of these energy efficiency and renewable energy, particularly the renewable energy, forward in rural areas and small towns. So that should be right up your alley.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, all right. So hope to see you all next time. Thanks for joining, and I'll send out the recording soon here. All right. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.